Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're taking a sideways look at the convention scene. With me in the studio is Ben Coleman. Ben is a film critic and feature writer for the Portland Mercury. He's an occasional sketch writer for Livewire Radio and the co-writer, along with Dylan McConis, of the new Oni Press comic series, The Long Con. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
Also in the studio is Melissa Miseros. Melissa is the public relations director for Oni Press, formerly the PR manager at Dark Horse Comics. Hello, Melissa.
Hi.
And on the phone from Los Angeles is Emily Denich. Emily is the artist on The Long Con. Hi, Emily. Great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Dylan McConis is traveling. Couldn't join us today. We're looking forward to having her on again soon. In the meantime, it's great to have you all on Words and Pictures. Let's jump right into this new series that you've been collaborating on. I'll mention that you have also a colorist, Victoria Roboto, and editors Ari Yarwood and Robin Herrera. Melissa, what can you tell us about The Long Con? This was brought to you at Oni. You're a very local publisher. You've been around a long time. Dylan McConis, co-author of the story, calls it Galaxy Quest meets Mad Max.
And that's exactly what it is. I think the thing is that we have a huge focus on not just promoting comics itself, but local artists in general. And I think, you know, when Ari and Robin got this story, there was no way we couldn't publish it because it's so abstract and it's so comical. And I think Ben could speak better to it than I can because he is the writer and he has all the secrets.
Right. Ben, as your co-author Dylan said, fandom is so much more diverse than it's usually portrayed. And how did you two get together and make this, make the story come together? I understand that there are a lot of people in your circle, especially in Dylan's circle over at Helioscope Comics, who had convention stories, especially from the big ones like San Diego Comic-Con, that made their way into the storyline.
So me and Dylan have known each other for several years. We have, I think, mainly known each other through the comic scene, through meeting at like convention after parties or things like that, and then other sort of nerd enclaves in the city. It's kind of a small town. If you're in one thing, you tend to be in another thing as well, and there's a fair amount of overlap there. I think we have just spent enough time at conventions feeling that sort of mix of sort of joy and exhaustion at the same time that we felt like there was enough material there for, what if that, but times a million.
Sensory overload for sure.
Yeah.
And we should mention that Dylan McConis is an artist as well as a writer. So, and she has a couple of web comics up, including Family Man and Bite Me. And Emily, you were handed some character designs that Dylan worked up, and you definitely put your own spin on them.
Yeah, I did. She's an extremely talented artist and character designer. So I just kind of took what they had in mind and just went with it, my own style.
So tell us about the main characters in the story. There's a reporter. He's a sort of noir, hard-boiled reporter. His name is Victor Lai. And he was at journalism school with Destiny Delaney, who becomes a PR person. So how does this character arc develop?
Well, I would say he's sort of medium boiled.
Oh, okay, medium boiled.
He's not particularly hard.
All right.
And I think our original idea was just that we wanted characters who had something in common, but they weren't current. So they needed to sort of one of them needed to explain this strange world of conventions to the other one. I think because we realized pretty early on that, you know, we're familiar with convention culture and convention life, but a lot of people aren't. A lot of people, it's still like, you know, nerds in furry costumes. What's the deal with that? and there are those things there. But so we wanted to make sure that we weren't only offering a look for, you know, insiders and in-jokes. We wanted to have it be very accessible to anybody who's just curious or, you know, enjoys the visuals, maybe without the crowds. We wanted to offer something along those lines.
Well, the convention is set in the fictional Southern California town of Los Spinoza. I'm thinking that you must be fans of Enlightenment philosophy, Western rationalism.
I studied a little bit of that in school. Dylan, I think, has the better background. Although I did, I think I threw that in there as a nod to her Family Man comic, which is very much about Western Enlightenment. And Spinoza in particular, I think, was of interest to both of us because he was, in many respects, considered to be the first secular Jew, and had this sort of very, I would say, sort of nerdy approach to philosophy and religion at the time that I think we both sort of admire from a distance.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. The Long Con, it's described as a humorous action-adventure series aimed at both teen and adult readers. It combines convention culture with post-apocalyptic fiction. So this is the story, the story is this is what happens when everything within a 50-mile radius of a major convention is destroyed, but the convention just keeps on going 5 years later.
Yeah. So, and while we were sitting down to figure out how we were going to tell the story, Dylan had pretty much the broad strokes figured out, including basically Dez and Victor from the beginning. We didn't know how long to set it in the future. We were originally talking about maybe it's been going on for 100 years. Maybe it's been going on for 1 year. And those are both very, very different stories than 5 years. I think we settled on 5 years because that's probably the maximum amount of time where you don't have to draw people looking older. But still, there's enough like in between. You can kind of put whatever you want. Kind of anything can have happened in 5 years. In terms of like, oh, like I've had a child or lost an eye or, you know, whatever you want to fill in the blanks. There's a lot of blank space to fill in.
Well, Emily, we were talking a little bit about a noir influence. Victor Lai, he's a reporter. He has an assignment editor, and there's a very sort of, it's more of a colorful noir. It sort of reminds me of Chinatown. It's got this, it's got kind of a 40s kind of look to it. And the interesting thing is that somewhere after the apocalyptic event, technology seems to have gone from digital back to analog. Victor is carrying around a notebook. There are VHS tapes on his editor's desk. Tell us a little bit about drawing this world and what was the backstory behind all of this?
Well, there is a line in that scene where I can't remember if it's Victor or his boss Cal says something like that the apocalypse was a big boon for print media because, you know, everything went offline. And in his office, you know, you can see headlines that were published after the apocalypse, you know, talking about the event and stuff. And I don't know. I have an advantage. I'm old enough. I actually remember VHS tapes and things like that. So, yeah, it was just kind of like, at this point when I was drawing, I was really, really new to the script. But I guess luckily enough, like Ben and Dylan are such descriptive writers that I was able to kind of see it in my head. And what I came up with on the page is basically what they had on the script. I just kind of tried to do a direct translation more than anything, I think.
Well, the you have definitely... I've heard both writers say that they sort of cut some things out of the script because you were doing so well at just your poses and expressions. Mm-hmm. And you also get a lot of, well, you know, we mentioned they're trying to keep the number of in-jokes down, but there are some great ones. I mean, San Diego Comic-Con has Artist's Alley. The Long Con has Indie Archipelago.
Yeah.
And the biggest in-joke is that you drew a very recognizable Dylan and Ben as the creators of the Lone Corn comic.
Yeah, the Lone Corn. I love that joke.
And things don't go very well for the Dylan and Ben characters in the comic. No spoilers. But...
No, but I do...
For what characters?
For our stand-ins.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we definitely felt that because, you know, this is kind of a occasionally violent comic, and some violence is being done to parodies of recognizable pop culture elements that we ourselves should not be immune from that. and so we were sort of the sacrificial lambs, I feel like, in that regard.
Well, and you're probably of the opinion that if you have the chance to appear in your own comic and then something horrible happened to you, I mean, why not take it? Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. We wanted to be indulgent, but also not like, you know, sort of cloyingly indulgent. You know, you gotta do some damage to yourself as well.
And we'll also mention there's nothing NC-17 in the comic, but there are sly references to such activities as furry fetishes and slash fiction. Do we want to explain those terms to the listeners or just let them Google them?
No, probably not. You Google at your own risk, for the slash especially. Furry, I will go say the furry fandom is a broad and diverse community that is not sort of inherently sexual. There are lots of different kinds of furries. We, I think, just had some furries in the background who actually do show up a bit later. But as sort of an example of the sort of very colorful outside, you know, slightly bizarre things you will see at a convention. Although it is not just the furries who are large and bizarre. They're definitely a strong sort of subculture within the community. And then the slash fiction, sort of one of the themes of our comic is that there's been this long-running sci-fi show, many generational sci-fi show, kind of like Star Trek, which me and Dylan both love very deeply. And there is a long, rich community going back to the 70s, almost as soon as the show began, of people on like electric typewriters just describing the filthiest sex scenes between Captain Kirk and Commander Spock, and sort of everybody in the crew in various configurations. And really like a pre-internet fan culture, just of people creating the kind of erotic media that they wanted to see in the world on electric typewriters, and then distributing it by hand to each other at conventions or by mail. And I think because we're trying to show affection for all aspects, affection and then maybe, you know, a little bit of exhaustion with all aspects of, you know, sort of fan culture, we wanted to include a nod to that in the sort of the bonus section at the end. So Dylan drew a very lovely, very sort of, I think, sweet, sort of, you know, late 70s fanfic drawing. And I wrote the fan fiction, in-universe fan fiction, which is a first for me. I have not written any fan fiction on my own. So that was fun.
It might have been a soft R, maybe a PG-13.
Well, it cuts off before anything.
Right. Well, you know, when I first started going to San Diego Comic-Con, it focused a lot more on artists and comics. And it's become, you know, a place for Hollywood tent poles and celebrity guests to show up. And you mentioned that you're a Star Trek fan. You've participated in Trek in the Park, which is a well-missed Portland activity. We'll get to that later. But I do want to mention there is a kind of a Star Trek stand-in in this comic. And it becomes the sort of MacGuffin of the way that things develop. So we have a little reading here that I'm going to actually participate in from the comic, and you can kind of set this up. You can set this up with the characters from this TV show, this beloved TV show called Skylarks.
Yeah, and Skylarks is it's a Star Trek analog, although we sort of went by the rule of Galaxy Quest. Which is Galaxy Quest, yeah, it's based on Star Trek, but they did their own thing with it to the point where you would actually watch that show. I mean, I would watch that show. So we wanted to make it sort of entertaining and fun and sort of our own spin on it. So one of the central themes is that the evil alien race in this, the reoccurring, they're sort of their Klingons, are they're called Mantoids, which are large purple mantis creatures, which we love. And that's basically all you need to know going in. Also, I think we talked about Victor being a reporter. Dez, his friend, is the publicist for a local indie comics company. So no relation, but we thought Melissa would be a good fit for that.
Okay, and you're playing Victor. So I'm I'm the Mantoid here. Okay.
Yes.
It's the story of a lifetime. I am a Mantoid. I come from a warrior society. And those Zornthaps in the security line want me to peace bond my fearsome talons. My people did not sign the 17 Mantoid Accords of Valor to simply render our carapace blades inert at the slightest provocation.
I just asked for your name.
The Skylark's authorities don't want you to know the truth about their genocidal plans. I must be able to defend myself.
Look, if I give you my card, will you go away?
Vic?
Victor.
Death to all outsiders!
Destiny?
Most normals call me Des now. But here, amongst my tribe, I'm only known as Ninja Fang 420.
Let's see. Oh.
There's a dramatic pause there.
Dramatic pause.
Yeah. Oh, you're still such a sucker.
No, you are.
Seriously, dude. I'm so stoked that you got in touch. It's been, what, 6 years? How are you?
Right now, I'm a little hungover.
No way, me too. There was an open bar after the preview night and things got pretty wild. What were you celebrating?
Vodka's birthday?
Mazel tov.
Thanks for sneaking me in. If I don't turn in 400 words on this show by 5 p.m., my living hemorrhoid of an editor is going to turf me back to the cat show beat.
As if I could say no to my old study buddy.
So what's your official job title? I'll make sure you get a mention in the article.
Publicist. I do promotion for Total BS.
Oh, I thought you liked graphic, comic, novel, book stuff.
Oh, I do. Total BS is the name of my publisher, the publisher I work for. Very indie, very hip.
So that is Destiny and Victor in Happier Times. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Kanzer, and we're talking today about The Long Con. It's a post-apocalyptic adventure story set in the world of comic conventions. My guests are Melissa Mazzeros from Oni Press, along with artist E.A. Denich and co-writer Ben Coleman. So, Ben, let's talk a little bit about Trek in the Park. This was an event that went on for several years, an annual event that didn't just bring out nerds, but it brought out all kinds of folks to the open air to do what?
Yeah, so it was my friend and colleague Adam Roscoe and his sister Amy were theater kids. Who sort of came to Portland and had been sort of looking at the theater scene and felt like it wasn't super accessible to regular people, and wanted to sort of capture a fun pop culture sort of draw, and B, sort of like Shakespeare in the Park, that sort of like you don't have to, you know, get dressed up or wait in line or whatever. You just go to the park and see, you know, people acting. So they both loved Star Trek growing up, and they realized that the original series in the late 60s was sort of built like a play. All the sets were very simple. The costumes were pretty straightforward. They didn't move the camera around a lot. They were, you know, it was very much like a teleplay in a lot of ways. And they thought that would be fairly, not easy, but achievable to replicate in a live setting. So they did a lot of work and put everything together. Their mom was a costume designer. Marge helped out with a lot of the early costumes and then the later costumes as well. And they got some local prop people to put together the props and put on a whole show.
I think one of the things that really pleased people the most were the lo-fi effects. Things like when the tribbles become this overgrown menace.
Well, the tribbles actually was the fifth year, a 5 year mission. So there were five summers we did this. I was involved in the last three, but the tribbles were actually fairly sophisticated for us, and were actually a bit more sophisticated than the show. Because on the original show, what they would do to make the tribbles move is they would take the little jumping dog toy. And they would cut the head off, and then they would wind it up and put it inside a tribble, and then that's how they got the tribbles to sort of flop around. And we actually, our prop guy used rare earth magnets.
Oh, wow.
To, on the underside of a table, sort of move the tribble sort of remotely without actually having any wires or strings or anything, which is, you know, just not to brag or anything, but, you know, a little better than they had.
You improved on Gene Roddenberry.
Well, and I think Gene Roddenberry would have said, you know, the cheaper way is better. Which is fair. I think that's why he was such a prolific showrunner, is that he was very practically minded, which is something that I admire as a creator myself. Is if you could do it simply and cheaply and efficiently, he would go for that.
So the Trek in the Park people had a lot of fun with the Star Trek universe. They weren't taking it too seriously. But in the Long Con, in the post-apocalyptic world of your story, people take it very seriously.
Yeah, and I think that's a little affectionate ribbing on our part. I don't think that a bunch of Star Trek nerds would immediately default to, you know, fascism if given the opportunity. But we did sort of want to acknowledge that, you know, the uniforms, you know, the regimented uniforms are there. The focus on rank is there. The really sort of pedantic obsession with sort of rules and continuity and canon can be there. And it seemed to us like, you know, if things went bad, that might be the template for, you know, a sort of oppressive regime if, you know, all rules are off and sort of the only authority is what you make of it.
So the fans of the original canonical show of Skylarks, they're sort of at a point where they're running the things. And there are little bands of other groups. There's the Long Con's own version of Peter Pan's Lost Boys, the Feral Tweens.
Yeah, that was just something that I think happens in real life, honestly, if you let tweens get sugar in them. And they might have, they might not even be, you know, be feral, they're just dressed that way. It's hard to tell at a convention.
And Emily, another character that follows the two main characters around, Victor and Dez, it's Dez's intern, Lauren. And she expresses herself in the language of emojis. So you had an opportunity to get very visual with that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. She's very animated, very typical millennial intern type character. So she's a lot of fun to draw.
So you had a lot of the fun interplay between Gen X and millennial characters there, that generational divide.
Oh, sure, yeah, definitely.
I would say, for the record, I think, you know, if the characters are our age, me and Dylan are both in our early 30s, so I think we're on the tail end of the millennial spectrum anyway.
Yeah, but, same, I am too.
Yeah, Lauren is a young millennial. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, and I think there is a pretty large cultural divide between young millennials and old millennials like us that we wanted to, you know, poke a little fun at.
So, obviously, Emily, you're a convention goer yourself, and what were the experiences that you took away from your own time attending conventions that helped you to create this world along with Ben and Dylan?
I just, I'm not like a huge convention goer. I've been to SDCC 3 times now. I went to Wizard World like twice a decade ago. I went to a really small anime convention in Kansas City, and that's about it. So I don't have like extensive con experience, but I mean, I guess if you've been to SDCC, that's kind of like the, you know, like the ultimate Comic-Con experience. So I guess I would have to say is that the thing I always take away the most from every experience is just how much there is to see and do and look at. It's just always sensory overload of every kind you can think of. So I just kind of wanted to bring that across in the con culture, is that it's just like candy colored, like chaotic, like nerd stuff everywhere. And there's a couple splash pages where you can see the convention. I just try to cram as much like detail in there as possible. Like one of the things I always noticed from the cons is they sell, especially at Wizard, there's like booths of like ninja weapons and stuff. Like they sell like swords and like shuriken, all kinds of stuff. And I was like, so weird. It just seemed kind of disconnected.
Oops, I think we're having a little bit of a connection problem with Emily. And we'll see if we can get that fixed. Ah, there we go. You're back. Good.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
No, anyway, so we're talking about weapons, and weapons play a big part in the story of the Long Con, especially the post-apocalyptic part of the story.
Oh, yes, for sure. No spoilers, but weapons at one point. So, yeah.
And that's definitely something for me that was very appealing as a writer, is that you have this constant uncertainty, just being a human being at a convention, of like, is that really a cop with a real gun or like a pretend cop with a pretend gun? And you see a lot of people cosplaying as military characters from video games. And so you can definitely, or you have military recruiters who are in actual uniform. And so you can get this sort of very fun kind of dissonance between, you know, reality and, you know, the constructed reality of, you know, a costume or a, you know, a fake TV show. And so that definitely, and then also a lot of real ninja weapons, which again, I agree with Emily, is just a weird thing to sell in a room full of, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah, it's interesting how cosplay. Some of these folks are so good at this that you really can, you really have this very vague line between fantasy and reality.
Yeah, and we definitely wanted to. I think a lot of times when a TV show or, you know, some sort of pop culture will dip their toe into a convention story, the cosplayers are always either just obsessive or kind of pathetic or bizarre. And we wanted to show that these are very, very intense fans, and they're doing it, you know, either because they love the look of a costume or they love the character behind it or both. And they're extremely talented, and they're a huge part of convention culture these days. And they're sort of what makes a convention look like a convention, and not just, you know, an insurance, you know, convention. It's very much a part of the culture now, and we wanted to show them in, you know, not a uniformly positive light, because obviously, you know, their character is just like anybody else. But we wanted to show a range of different cosplayers and a range of different ways of connecting with a fandom, some of them healthy and then some of them less healthy.
Well, it goes back to what you were saying earlier about fandom being so much more diverse than it's usually portrayed in TV and movies and pop culture. I mean, in my old hometown of Chicago, there's WakandaCon happening right now with the Black Panther fans. There's fans of manga and anime everywhere in the Northwest here and elsewhere. And it kind of, you know, some people bristle at portrayals at shows like Comic Book Men that just continue to show nerd culture and fandom and comic book culture as being the province of sort of middle-aged pasty guys.
And I will say, you know, it's not like the middle-aged pasty guys have gone away. there's still plenty of them, and some of those are my dearest friends. And when I am middle-aged, I will be a middle-aged pasty white guy at a comic book show. It's not that we have contempt for that, you know, aspect of the culture. But definitely we wanted to show that there are lots of other people as well who engage in this kind of stuff on an equal or greater level and have to work harder a lot of the time to, you know, to get the same amount of attention or the same amount of cred that, you know, your sort of stereotypical, you know, nerd guy sort of gets by default. And I think that it's not sort of the core focus of the it's not the core focus of the book, but it's definitely a very strong component of it that, you know, these characters engage in fandom on, you know, a deep, significant level. And we just sort of take that for granted. They don't have to prove it to our protagonists. Our protagonists accept them. There are some, you know, problem people maybe who give them a little trouble. But yeah, that's sort of our goal with the book.
Well, the series is going to continue. Melissa, this, I believe, the third book is out right now, and this is going to be a 10 comic book series.
It's the second one that's coming out, and they actually just had a sellout reprint, so we did a special edition of the first issue, which will be out in September.
Okay, and so there's more material to come, more development to come, and Emily, is this your first time working with this group of Portlanders? Are you looking forward to doing some more collaboration with them in the future?
It is my first time, and it's been a really, really great time. My editors have been great. Melissa's been great. Writers, it's been a really awesome time. I pretty much knew that I wanted to work on this whenever I saw the pitch book. It was like Melissa said, it was like kind of irresistible. So I would love to work with Dylan and Ben in the future. That'd be great.
Well, the comic series is The Long Con. It's a post-apocalyptic adventure story set in the world of comic conventions. The writers are Ben Coleman and Dylan McConus. The artist is E.A. Denich. And we have Melissa Mazzaros from Oni Press. Ben, Emily, and Melissa, thanks for joining us today on Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And Melissa, where can people follow this story, either in print or online?
Well, you can go to anybody, follow our social media. That's the easiest way to put it, because we do have, we're actually working on fixing up our website right now, but we do have a Shopify site, which it is available. It's also available at your local comic book shop, as well as on Comixology and Amazon, as well as
TheLongConComic.com.
And Oni Press, of course. So thank you so much. You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. Many thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.FM/Words and Pictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @Words and Pictures.